Hello, it's Ashton Lewis.
And I'm Daphne Lynn.
And you are listening to the
NDE World Podcast.
Welcome to the NDE World Podcast. I am your host, Ashton Lewis. May peace be with you all. In the studio with me, my lovely hostess, Miss Daphne Lynn. Hello, Miss Daphne Lynn. How are you today?
I'm doing absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for asking. How are you?
I am doing absolutely fantastic.
Fantastical.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. Synchronicities.
Yeah.
Connection.
Just actually enjoying some hot mint tea. Yeah, a little cup of tea. Yeah.
Tea time talk.
Yeah, tea time talk. Yeah, I like to do a little tea every now and then in the mornings. I was looking forward to the actual episode today. We are in the actual workbook. And we're going to be getting into, you know, I don't know if it's today's episode or, you know, one of the next episodes, next two or three or whatever, but we're actually fixing to start getting to the really deep, life-changing, methodological, that's a word if I said that right, you know, practices to really start making this stuff happen and really putting it into practice. I'm looking forward to that. But today we are going to be looking at the chapter 3 on, you know, in the actual workbook, so...
Is the workbook on the website as well?
It's not on the website because actually this is like, it's not my work and I don't really have the right to put it on just yet because it's actually from one of my mentors.
Oh, okay,
and,
gotcha.
But I'll see what I can do. But, you know, the main thing is at least we have, you know, permission to be able to at least share it. But right. I'll see what I can do. I don't think it'd be a problem, but I'll see if we can maybe take it and add it to the website. Yeah, that's a good idea. Good idea. Speaking of the today, we're going to be the chapter 3 is talking about this guy's actual experience. You know, my mentor, where he was actually was a Buddhist monk and spent all of his life in Tibet and the temples and stuff. But he has his grassroots beginnings. His story is an awesome story. But anyway, today. We'll share a little bit of his story. In fact, that's what the actual, you know, chapter 3 is he actually shares a little bit of his story, and then we'll actually start getting, you know, how he transitioned into this world, this life, and became an actual master, you know,
a
master teacher as well. So, but we'll get into that here shortly.
So his story then?
Yes.
Okay, awesome.
Absolutely. All of this that we've been talking about, the Yudo, the Universal Divine Oneness, this was my mentor. That's the one I learned a lot of this from.
Gotcha.
My biggest, well, I got a few, like we all do, but this was the one, the main one that taught this, you know, that I was actually privileged enough to be able to start learning and sharing. I just got to really start putting it all into practice. And that's kind of where we're at right now. Kind of growing together, to be honest with you.
Awesome. Awesome.
Okay, now before we go much further, let's go ahead and put a plug in for the website, nde.world. So if you get a chance, go over there and check it out. We have got so much going on over there, and we'd love for you guys to go check everything out. And definitely, if you're into this kind of stuff, spirituality and growing spiritually, and you know everything from the NDEs, the near-death experiences, to the out-of-body experiences, the
spiritual,
you know, spirituality,
mm-hmm.
Yes. Different types of phenomena, things like that. It's really cool, really cool. NDE.world, you know, it's really, really growing. And we have like over 100 podcasts on there on different type of, on different subjects pertaining to, you know, to this world.
Mm-hmm.
The life, death, and beyond, should I say.
Yes.
Spiritually speaking.
Yes, most definitely.
So, again, that website is?
NDE.world.
Thank you, thank you. Well, let's look at this chapter 3, guys, in this workbook here. And it's actually titled, My Experience with Universal Divine Oneness, okay? And this is, like I said, from my mentor. This is not my material. We're just actually sharing it with you guys. So I'm going to read a little bit about his story as we move towards, you know, what we're doing with all of this. So let's see what he has to say. When I was younger, the selfish way many people lived and treated each other left me confused and miserable. I couldn't relate to or go along with the quote-unquote dog-eat-dog ways of the world. I naturally wanted to end my suffering and confusion and was desperate for answers about life and spirituality, answers that actually made sense. Such answers were hard to come by. I went from being a believer in my family religion to an atheist, to an agnostic, then back to a believer in God again, but unsure in what form or concept. I became an insatiable spiritual seeker, looking for that path of total truth and consistent answers that put it all together. I found threads and bits and pieces here and there, but never found something that totally, as a whole, rang the inner bells of truth.
Isn't that so true for many of us today? I mean, I can agree with this. It totally resonates with me. So, not that I ever became an atheist. I've always believed. But, you know, the different stages of spiritual evolution that we go through.
Right, right.
You know, it's an ongoing process. It's not just, whoop, here it is. That's it.
That's right.
Yeah, so and it's a continued seeking.
Absolutely, absolutely.
To know what those total resonating truths are.
Right, right. And I can totally relate as well. Yeah. And like you said, it's what we have to go through. We have to go through all these different things to find that truth that resonates. And you will, if you're on your path and you are seeking your higher good. Let's move on. It says here, as mentioned earlier, I found threads and bits and pieces here and there, but never found something that totally as a whole rang the inner bells of truth. Then one day I did. Just as I was about to give up hope and commit suicide, I finally came upon these simple teachings that made sense of it all. And indeed, it was so simple, the revelation was shocking. Selfishness was the disease, the root of all problems. And unselfish love, universal divine oneness, the cure. I realized that was the big answer I had been unknowingly looking for my whole life. I also realized that I was homesick, in a way, for people who were living by universal divine oneness or working on living by it. Subsequently, I entered a monastery. My goal was to become an unselfishly loving person, return to living in oneness and harmony with God or the universal, spirit or the universe, and being an instrument of God's will and love. All of my studies and training applied to achieving that goal. I used traditional techniques of asceticism, meditation and prayer, affirmation, etc., to do everything I could to change. It was a long, hard, but fruitful process. This culminated with a near-death experience, an NDE, that also changed me. I eventually achieved my goals, and now my life is dedicated to helping others achieve the same things, which is why I wrote this workbook. When I chose to become a monk, it wasn't just to help end my own pain and improve my own life, but also because I was sensitive to the empty lives and suffering of others, and eventually wanted to help them too. And I knew I could only do that by example. So I had to, quote, get it and live by it first. So now I continue to pass on that heritage, offering it to others so they can make their own lives better and can pass it on to others themselves. Tag, you're it. Pass it on. Even though I have a background as a monk, I also have family. My life's work has been counseling people and teaching the principles and methods in this book and others. I have decades of experience in dealing with many different kinds of interpersonal relationships and group situations. It is my hope that all my experience can be used to your benefit through this book. Obviously, most people don't want a monastic life, living in a monastery, but do want a better and more spiritual life. Many people have asked for advice on how they can apply Yudo or universal divine oneness in their lives without joining a monastery. They want to know what they can do in their present life situations. And there is a lot you can do, but it's kind of like being self-employed. A monastery is like being at work. When you work for someone else at a job, you know you can't be a slouch or you'll get fired. The entire environment is geared towards keeping you on track and functioning at maximum production potential. It makes perfect sense. Being your own boss and working at home takes far more self-discipline. You have no supervisors other than you. No time clock other than yours. Lots of diversions and temptations to lead you off track if you don't stay on top of yourself. Thus, this book not only covers virtually all types of living scenarios in which you can work on your own spiritual development by applying universal divine oneness, it gives you all kinds of techniques, guidelines, and daily checklists to help you stay on track and achieve your goals. It includes some ideas and methods for applying universal divine oneness while living alone, living with a spouse and or family, doing study groups, church groups, roommate situations, and even actually creating an intentional roommate situation as a semi-mini monastery. But we must mention that this kind of thing has never been done before in quite this way and is, as such, very experimental. So, while you can use the ideas set forth here, don't hesitate to try and modify them to fit your own personal exact situation. So, moving on along, chapter 4. Me first. No, me first. Naturally inherent within universal divine oneness and unselfish love is the premise of focusing on loving others before ourselves. Okay? That was the whole point of the parable about the long spoons. Those who only thought of themselves first got nothing and were miserable. Those who thought of others first got fed and were happy.
Yes, and if you're just tuning in on this episode, the previous episode gave this example of the long spoons.
Yeah, it's actually a parable, a little story. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, thank you. It may be paradoxical, but the fact is, when you are truly being unselfish, you have pure love for everyone, including your own self. Such real love makes for a situation in which loving others and loving yourself occurs simultaneously. But it has to start with giving. That's because pure love is something that flows outwards. Keep that in mind. Instead of going in, it's going out. It is directional. Picture water flowing through a hose. It flows in one direction, not backwards, nor back and forth, give and take, only outwards, giving. So, to have pure love, to experience it, to have it residing within yourself, all you need to do is give it. If you don't, you end up with no love, period. No love for others, no love for yourself, and no others who love you.
Pure love, not the selfish conditional love we were covering on a previous episode as well.
Yeah.
Doesn't it all start to make sense that everything you do must be done in love?
Yeah, and if you want to be loved, if you want love, you gotta give love. It.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and that's with anything. Like the expression, you have to be what you want. As far as like, if you want a world of love, then you need to be love. If you want a world of peace, you need to be peace, you know. Be it and give it, you know, live it. You have to be those, you know.
Love is really the key to everything.
Yeah. Let's move on. It says here that one of the easiest ways to grasp the concept of pure love is to observe a mother with a baby. You can even see it with animals. Unselfishly loving others is much like the self-sacrificing love of a normal mother for her children. I like how they said normal.
Mm-hmm.
Her love for her child puts the child's needs and interests first. The child does not need to reciprocate.
Mm-hmm.
Love fills the mother as she gives love to the child. So what about the idea that you must love yourself first? Well, everyone is welcome to their own, you know, ideas and opinions and concepts, if that works for them. And following their own ideas, of course. And it says here that I'm not saying that you shouldn't love yourself. You should. So here's a tip for you. I am saying that I and many others have observed that having pure love for yourself as opposed to selfish love only occurs as a result of loving others first. If you disagree, please objectively consider the examples below regarding the effects of the two different approaches to loving yourself. There are many who are, quote, self-loving, but have never gone on to really care for anyone else. They just continue to further their own self-interest and selfishness. And because of that, they continue to be selfish contributors to a world full of selfishly based problems, harm, and subsequent suffering. On the other hand, not one person who ever embraced the principle of caring for others first lacked loving themselves also. Think about it. If you unselfishly love others first, it is impossible not to feel good about yourself and love yourself. Loving others gives you self-esteem. Also, you love yourself too, simultaneously. There is no way anyone who unselfishly loves others could not love themselves automatically and feel great about themselves. When you feel and give pure love, it is good for everyone, including yourself. In fact, loving others is the only way that you can unselfishly, truly love yourself. And unselfish love is truly the only real kind of love, as opposed to the quote-unquote romantic or the I love French food concepts of love.
Mm-hmm.
Daphne?
I get that. Most definitely. I mean, we kind of covered the different types of love on the previous episode. When you're able to love others, it really does come back to yourself. And you feel more fulfilled.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. It does give you that more, I don't know, it is. I feel better even when I do things for people. I don't feel comfortable even taking money from people. I don't, especially family. You know, and I know a lot of people will. They'd rather take money than help someone out. Me, I'd rather just do it. Let me do it because there's kind of like a buzz I get off of it if I do it, and I know I did it out of just wanting to do it. And as long as they are appreciative. Now, when you do something and you're all out and you're going into it, you know, give all you got into it, and they're like, okay, hey, yeah, whatever, thanks, whatever. See you later. It's like, you know, but this is all part of it. But if you can at least get a sense of appreciation. But I do it because I like to do it. You know, don't expect nothing in return.
Right, yeah.
You know, not even
unselfishly giving.
Yeah, yeah. Not even a comment or a thank you or whatever. Because if you're expecting that, then are you really doing it for the right reason? Moving on. Pure love is self-fulfilling. It has its own regards and good feelings built in. Here's another analogy that can help people understand. Imagine we are like faucets connected to a water supply. A faucet is essentially a valve or an on and off switch that allows the water to flow or not flow. Imagine that pure love is the water. We need and want water or love. But if we try to keep it all to ourselves by keeping the faucet off, we aren't getting any water flow into us either. However, when we open ourselves to let the water flow freely, freely giving it out, the water is also flowing into us and through us. So, we are getting the water ourselves also. But if we try to selfishly have water just for ourselves, to, quote, possess our water by shutting off our valves and not giving it freely, not letting the water flow on through us, what happens? We shut off our own supply, for it is no longer in us. So giving love to others first is truly loving yourself. Not first, not second, it is simultaneous. Just by giving it, doing it, you get it. Daphne?
Well said. I like that. So when you love others, you can, at the same time, love yourself.
Yeah.
And not that you can, but you do, because unselfishly, unconditionally loving others, it comes back to the source of where it came from.
It's simultaneous.
Right.
In other words, it's not like you have to love yourself first or whatever. You have to love others first, and that is how you love yourself.
Right. I like the way this brought it out, so it helps to open up a broader perspective of it. You know, it's very fulfilling when you can love others, then you will naturally love yourself.
Right. Well, that's like I said, we're all in this together. We're learning it together, and you know, yeah. I'm learning, and also we're all a work in progress. So,
you know, and I didn't realize this because, you know, we've been through the different books from this particular mentor. I did not realize until this chapter of this book that they had had a near-death experience as well. So yeah. It gives you a whole broader
appreciation
for the work that they've put into this, that they are actually living and have been through these spiritual transformative experiences to be able to share this knowledge.
Oh, yeah. And this is just scratching the surface. Now, I have the original book that he had put out. He's got quite a few. But it was all low-key and undercover. It wasn't like put out on the big market. It was mostly more of an esoteric kind of type thing, for lack of words.
And most of the esoteric stuff in today's times gets hidden, put away from us, because elites and the powers that be don't want you to become enlightened, don't want you to have what the universe can bring and the knowledge that's there. They want to keep it for themselves so that they can have and be. When it's all of us in this together.
Yeah.
Kind of like in the example of the faucet here, if you're cutting it off from everybody else, you're cutting it off from yourself.
Yeah, that's right. And really, if you think about it, does it not really just tie into that separate selfishness consciousness?
Exactly, yeah.
That really is the root of it. When you really look at it, we're hitting every nail on the head. That actually describes everything that we're experiencing.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, moving on along. Now, there's a little quote right there, Daphne, if you'd like to read that little quote before we move on.
Yeah, this is from James Barry. It says, "Those who bring sunshine to the lives of others cannot keep it from themselves."
Yeah,
nice. Fits perfectly in with that paragraph that we just read about just letting the love flow. And then you yourself experience it.
Just let your love flow.
Just let your love flow. Like a mountain stream. Let your love flow.
Okay, thank you. Moving on along. Unselfish love versus unconditional love. Okay, what's the difference between unselfish love and unconditional love? Let's see. Unselfish love is a type of unconditional love. But if you interpret the words unconditional love literally, it means giving to or being supportive of someone regardless of their actions, no matter what. If we use that as the definition of unconditional love, then what we call unselfish love is different in an important way. Unselfish love does not mean giving the loved one anything they want or supporting any and all actions. Unconditional love like that could be harmful to the one you love. Unselfishly loving someone does mean that you will always care for them, always still care about what is best for them, regardless of what the loved one may do or choose. But there can be conditions set on interaction or support. It's not a matter of a fixed rule. Everyone is different. Everyone has different needs. There are some things that are the same, but each individual does have different things that should be allowed or not allowed. Loving someone unselfishly automatically makes you give to the loved one what their whole being needs. But it does not just feed their wants and desires. In fact, unselfish love may actually require denying a loved one's desire. But whatever is required for the person, whether giving and or denying, both are done regardless of its consequences on you. Even if it means the person will hate you or fight you, you must do what is best for them. For example, consider the raising of children. Let's look at the application of unselfish love versus unconditional love and normal selfish love in that scenario. There are times when you should not give a child what it wants because it's not in their best interest. They may want something that could harm themselves or harm someone or something else. But when unselfish love is not present, a child is likely to be given into when they persist enough or throw an ego tantrum. But if you give in, even if there is no physical harm that results, it can make them what is commonly called spoiled. The term spoiled is merely a euphemism for a person's selfishness, being so consistently given into and well-fed that the selfish self grows in power and wants more and expects more. In the case of children, they become what people call little monsters. And in the case of adults, they become what's called selfish jerks or bitches. Child or adult, a person whose selfishness is overindulged becomes quite difficult to deal with, and they lack civility and love for others. You may have seen people who are often mean to their children. Sometimes they get very abusive. But that isn't what we mean by not giving in to them. Actually, it's quite the opposite. There's a common flip side to the coin of indulging someone's self. Since it is being done because the person giving in is actually selfish, the other aspect of their selfishness also comes out. Sometimes, rather than giving in to a child, the same parent who is not unselfishly loving will instead treat the child with anger or even violence, which also further creates bad programming, bad behavior, and a monster. How many times have you seen a parent tell a child not to do something and the child ignores them? The child ignores them because they know that they can get away with it. Then the parent says no again. Still, no results. Eventually, the parent gets angry and either yells or strikes the child. What does that teach the child? Two things. One, it may be worth the gamble to see how far it can get away with something, okay? Because they know the parent doesn't really mean what they say or back up their threats with action very often. And number two, when the parent finally loses it, all the child knows is they are being attacked, hated, and that bigger and stronger is better, and might makes right. All very bad lessons. On the other hand, an unselfishly loving parent will give loving instructions one time and then demonstrate that with absolute regularity, that if they are not listened to, a loving discipline will occur. Sure, it takes more work and ironclad consistency, and you must sometimes do things that are unpleasant, both for yourself and for the child, such as taking away something the child likes, or grounding them, or isolating them, like sending them to their room, but always with love and kindness. Only such true loving action yields good results. And it yields remarkable results. The child will eventually not test its limits and ends up happier, more loving, being itself. This applies to relationships also. If you tolerate harmful or unpleasant behavior in a mate or a friend, either because of unconditional love or because your relationship is based on selfish motives, then you have a mess. And when you finally lose it and get negative and angry, it will create even more of a mess. But if you love unselfishly, you may even be able to help someone overcome their problems. By both not tolerating bad behavior and giving loving, positive direction at the same time. Any comments before we move on? It's a lot.
It is a lot, yes. I have this thought that's come into my mind, and it's that the coin. You have to love unselfishly, but you also have to love unconditionally. And there's a very fine line of the law, the universal laws that you can apply to this without harming anyone else or giving in too much that allows them to harm themselves.
Right. And I like how they really broke it down. You can see it in the world around us now,
mm-hmm.
with that identity crisis and children playing the role of authority and the parents are more playing the role of the children. And the children are testing parents. You know, they will test you, they'll throw fits, they will scream and do the tantrum and get their way. And this is just a really a bad, you know, it's a bad way of bringing up someone because, you know, it teaches selfishness, which a selfish child becomes a selfish adult, you know, and they become unpleasant to be around as a child. And as they grow up, they really become very unpleasant to be around. And they're not really a valuable asset to society in the big picture.
Right. You know, example here of, you know, children really testing you and going into what they call an ego tantrum, you know, when they persist on something, getting something that they want and they don't get it, they go into that ego tantrum. My son, when he was like 12 to 14 months old, he did that with me. He went into full-blown tantrum on the floor, and I was like, I looked at him, and I just fell. I mean, I was standing up, so I literally fell on the floor and done the exact same thing that he did, and it broke his state, and he looked at me like, what is going on here? And he never did that again.
Yeah.
So it just broke that state.
It didn't work.
It backfired. So there's ways to break little ego tantrums when they happen. You know,
and you can do it playfully. You can do just like you just did. You know. You know, because then that way it's because they're trying to communicate with you, and once they communicate, you know, if I can throw a fit, I can scream, or what we call a tantrum. You know,
right?
And mom gives it to me, or dad gives it to me, then. That, you know, you can't really blame the kid because that's how they're developing that communication. Okay, well, how do I get what I want? Throw a fit. Scream. Throw a tantrum. That's how they're learning, you see. Whereas if they wanted something like that and they went to scream or something like that or throw a tantrum and fall and you just throw a tantrum and fall with them, you've just broken that connection that, oh, well, maybe that's not what that means. Maybe throwing a fit doesn't mean I can get what I want.
right.
Maybe if I throw a fit, somebody else is going to fall down and start acting freaky because why are they acting like that? Why are they falling on the floor?
Maybe
the child doesn't know that that's what they look like.
Exactly,
You see, maybe they don't know what a tantrum is. Maybe, and do they? You know, they are.
I mean,
they're having it. Don't get me wrong. They're throwing it, but do they really know?
And you you have to throw that full blown fit just like they're doing.
Yeah, that's a state breaker.
It really is. Yeah. And it really worked. I mean, he never had another tantrum like that.
As long as it works.
Yeah.
And it's in a loving, kind way, playful way.
Right.
Like we said earlier, you can do things with children. You don't have to hurt them. You don't have to harm them.
Exactly.
You know, but you do have to let them know who the parent is. You know, there is the authority and who the child is.
Mm-hmm.
And you work with them in that regard. Let's move on to the next section. I want to know what love is. I need you to show me. Some parents may have tasted a bit of the joy of unselfish love by anonymously giving to their children under the guise of gifts from Santa Claus. But even that taste was virtually nothing compared to the full experience of being totally unselfishly loving and the mix of peace of mind, sadness, and bliss that accompany it. Nor does it give us a taste of what it's like to be totally unselfishly loved. Most people have never experienced pure, unselfish love, either giving it or receiving it. How would you describe colors to a person born blind or born colorblind? And how could you describe colors to someone else if you were born blind yourself and have never experienced color yourself? That would be even more difficult. And unselfish love is something that you can give those who are blind because of selfishness. That will describe it to them. Even more, it will show it to them, even though they have never experienced it themselves. It will always be a blessing for them, even though they may not know it or know what's going on. It will be more powerful than your words, even though it will be in harmony with both your words and your actions. Because the experience of being unselfishly loved involves feeling something from someone, something subtle, possibly, but something that you've never felt before. It also involves an inner spiritual kindling, a knowing, and actually seeing an example of the way someone lives and acts. Most people can't love unselfishly until they experience being loved unselfishly first. You will be meeting people like that all the time. People who are ready to change. People who have prayed or desperately hoped for some kind of answers or guidance for their lives. Experiencing being loved can spark the flame of unselfish love within the loved one if they are open to change and to begin giving themselves. Of what good is any belief or growth method if it doesn't make life better, more kind, more beautiful? You can ask that for about anything.
Exactly, yes.
Anything. If your life does not radiate these things, then your life is but that of a sun that does not shine. The opportunity to grow, to give, and to unselfishly love is here every moment. It is the prayer that you make with your life. It is the eternal meditation. Alrighty, moving right on along. The Phantom Attacks by Night. Huh, that sounds interesting. In the years after I left the monastery, I traveled a great deal, working towards helping people reach towards mutual respect, compassion, and understand the universal spirituality we all have in common. During that time, I visited monasteries, ashrams, etc., of many different religions and paths. One that I visited for a few weeks had created a unique way for its members to experience unselfish love via giving to other members. They called it the Phantom. And here's how it works. Let's say someone makes a cake or a coat or whatever to give to someone else in the community. Rather than giving it to them outright or wrapped with a little card letting them know who the gift is from, they leave it sneakily in the middle of the night with a note saying it's from the Phantom. Their method ensures the anonymity of the giver. Thus, the only personal gain the giver gets is the joy of doing something nice for someone. The joy of unselfishly loving. This ensures that the giving is being done for the right reason, unselfishly, and is thus not feeding the selfish side. You might want to try some Phantom giving yourself. It's not only good for you, it's also fun.
Yeah, that's the one way to do it, huh?
Yeah, that's the way it should be done, too, because so many people like to, and I mean, even Yeshua talks about that in Scripture. You know, so many people want to bring all this attention to themselves because they think they're doing this great deed or they're doing something. I love that. Keep it on the low. It keeps the ego out.
Right.
I like that. The Phantom strikes. Look, man, guess what? The Phantom struck last night and he left me a coat. Check this out. Man, I got me a new coat. Yeah, go Phantom.
Right.
And the whole time, you never know. You know, we recently did a Phantom, Daphne and I here, a couple of months ago, we were able to pick up a few extra watermelons from one of the local little markets they got here on the coast, you know, and we had a couple extra ones. And so we drove by and we stopped. Our neighbors weren't home at the time, so we jumped out real quick and took one of the watermelons. It's went up there and like sat on the porch and got in the truck and took off. Never told him. I didn't think about, man, if I'd have known this, I would have put, you know, from the Phantom. At least left him a Phantom note, you know. But that was the Phantom concept. You know, we just recently did ourselves. Right, yeah. We never did tell them. So they don't know who. And there's more neighbors here in the area. So they really don't know and never did know. But that's the point. You don't do stuff because you want people to know. You don't want that brought to yourself. Oh, I did this for you. No. Do it because you want to do it, you know. Mm-hmm. So, next time, but I don't know, they might be scared if we leave some, you know, big old watermelon on their porch and it says the Phantom.
Right. These days, you know, the opposite side.
A little twist to it, yeah. Because, you know, I can see in the community, they all agree to that. They know that's what that means. Hey, if you want to leave something, leave it, you know, a note from the Phantom. They know, they expect it, you see. You know, in today's world, if you know, we leave a, you know, something like we did that watermelon.
And then might not eat it.
The Phantom, yeah, that's right.
It's jinxed. It's cursed.
God, yeah, who's the Phantom? Yeah. Let's move on along, guys. All righty, let's go ahead and wrap things up. We got our last section here, and it's titled "Unselfish Love and Abuse." There are many people who have suffered abuse, or are still in abusive relationships right now. We want to make certain that universal divine oneness principle of unselfish love does not get twisted, abused, and used as an excuse for abuse or tolerating abuse. Living by universal divine oneness doesn't mean that you should allow others to be abusive. People who have been abused develop abuse syndrome. They tend to let the abuse done to them slide or be okay and even blame themselves for it sometimes. So let's get that straight right away. If you are in an abusive situation, please go get professional help immediately. Now.
Get out of the situation.
Yeah. Sometimes friends and family don't help, but there are usually abuse shelters and programs in a city near you. If it's physical, call the police. Unselfish love does not mean letting someone emotionally or physically harm you, because you're supposed to be loving towards them. As we mentioned earlier, unselfish love is conditional and often requires different responses to different situations. It involves caring about others and doing what is best for others, yes. But being an emotional or physical, quote, punching bag is not best for anyone.
It's the love all, harm none.
That's right. Exactly.
Mantra harm none that we use here.
Thank you. Absolutely. Yep. Allowing abuse is not being unselfishly loving nor truly caring. Living by universal divine oneness does not preclude getting away from an emotionally abusive person or calling the authorities to deal with a physical abusive person. In fact, that would be the unselfishly loving thing to do in such a case. Sometimes people need a harsh wake-up call to give them an opportunity to change. If you want to help the abuser get therapy, do so second, only after you get help and treatment. Otherwise, you can get trapped back into the abusive situation again. Ironically, if you have been abused, applying universal divine oneness in your life may be the best hope for a cure. The field of psychology is split on this at the moment and seems to be dividing into two opposing camps. One that believes that focusing on caring about others is a mental illness in and of itself, and another that believes focusing on caring about others is the best way to prevent or heal trauma. Obviously, we are sympathetic to the latter way of thinking. We believe that unselfishly loving others is self-healing.
Yeah, it is amazing when you do love that it can be a healing process.
All righty, Ms. Daphne, that pretty much wraps it up. Do you have any final comments on today's episode, just kind of quick overview of what you really got out of it?
Yeah, and that pure, unconditional, unselfish love doesn't need to get twisted to where you are being in an abusive relationship or anything like that, in any relationship that you're in, whether it's business or personal, you know.
Right. You need to set boundaries.
Yeah, set boundaries on everything, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, very good, very good. Well, let's go ahead and wrap things up, and we will pick up on our next episode. Chapter 5 actually is titled Creating a New Universal Divine Oneness World. So That is going to be really exciting because we're going to start getting into some processes here soon, and we're just kind of setting up, you know, setting the stage for everything. So beautiful. Well, don't forget to go to the website, guys, nde.world, for more information on who we are and what we do and all that stuff that's cool for you.
Yeah, most definitely check out the website, nde.world, and check out the reviews, the topics that are of interest to you, and just share your story. Reach out to us. Join the Facebook group. Everything's there at the website.
Yep, you got it. nde.world. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We love you all. May peace be with you. Until next time.
Y'all let your light shine.
Hello, you beautiful souls. Don't forget to visit the website, nde.world. That is?
nde.world.